This evening we finish the chapter that opens the Yoga of Divine Works, Chapter 1, the Four Aids. And these last two sections, let's read through both of them, and we'll come back and talk about them a bit at the end. The teacher of the integral yoga will follow, as far as he may, the method of the teacher within us. He will lead the disciple through the nature of the disciple. Teaching, example, influence, these are the three instruments of the guru. But the wise teacher will not seek to impose himself or his opinions on the passive acceptance of the receptive mind. He will throw in only what is productive and sure as a seed which will grow under the divine fostering within. He will seek to awaken much more than to instruct. He will aim at the growth of the faculties and the experiences by a natural process and free expansion. He will give a method as an aid, as a utilizable device, not as an imperative formula or a fixed routine. And he will be on his guard against any turning of the means into a limitation, against the mechanizing of process. His whole business is to awaken the divine light and set working the divine force of which he himself is only a means and an aid, a body or a channel. The example is more powerful than the instruction. But it is not the example of the outward acts, nor that of the personal character, which is of most importance. These have their place and their utility. But what will most stimulate aspiration in others is the central fact of the divine realization within him, governing his whole life and inner state and all his activities. This is the universal and essential element. The rest belongs to individual person and circumstance. It is this dynamic realization that the sadhaka must feel and reproduce in himself according to his own nature. He need not strive after an imitation from outside, which may well be sterilizing rather than productive of right and natural fruits. Influence is more important than example. Influence is not the outward authority of the teacher over his disciple, but the power of his contact, of his presence, of the nearness of his soul to the soul of another, infusing into it, even though in silence, that which he himself is and possesses. This is the supreme sign of the master. For the greatest master is much less a teacher than a presence pouring the divine consciousness and its constituting light and power in purity and bliss into all who are receptive around him. And it shall also be a sign of the teacher of the integral yoga that he does not arrogate to himself guruhood in a humanly vain and self-exalting spirit. His work, if he has one, is a trust from above, he himself a channel, a vessel, or a representative. He is a man helping his brothers, a child leading children, a light kindling other lights, an awakened soul awakening souls. At highest, a power or presence of the divine calling to him other powers of the divine. The sadhaka who has all these aids is sure of his goal. Even a fall will be for him only a means of rising, and death a passage towards fulfillment. For once on this path, birth and death become only processes in the development of his being and the stages of his journey. Time is the remaining aid needed for the effectivity of the process. Time presents itself to human effort as an enemy or a friend, as a resistance, a medium, or an instrument. But always it is really the instrument of the soul. Time is a field of circumstances and forces meeting and working out a resultant progressions and working out a resultant progression whose course it measures. To the ego, it is a tyrant or a resistance, to the divine, an instrument. Therefore, while our effort is personal, time appears as a resistance, for it presents to us all the obstruction of the forces that conflict with our own. When the divine working and the personal are combined in our consciousness, it appears as a medium and a condition. When the two become one, it appears as a servant and instrument. The ideal attitude of the sadhaka towards time is to have an endless patience, as if he had all eternity for his fulfillment, and yet to develop the energy that shall realize now and with an ever-increasing mastery and pressure of rapidity till it reaches the miraculous instantaneousness of the supreme divine transformation. There are significant additions that Sri Aurobindo made to these closing paragraphs, which would interest you, but we begin with the teacher of the integral yoga. He will lead the disciple through the nature of the disciple. Of course, we find this idea expressed in the penultimate paragraph in chapter 6 in his book, The Mother, which he wrote many years later. Already, of course, we have an adumbration of that truth here in this chapter. So, teaching, example, influence. But he does not assign a text. He's not one of those types of gurus himself who tells you when to rise, when to retire, and what to do between, and apportions all the day to various activities. That would be a soulless routine to Sri Aurobindo. He had no particular urge to be a teacher at all. Guru Giri, you know, that urge to be the master over disciples, was absent in him. He accepted it as a role that he must play, that the divine appointed to him, and his notion, as he expressed in his correspondence, was that I will serve this role until you become aware of the divine within you, and then you no more need that instruction from me. Once it's alive and awake in you, my business is done. Leaving the sense to be gathered by the perceiving aspirant that you would be colleagues in the future, you would be brothers, as he says later, you know, a child leading children, a light kindling other lights, an awakened soul awakening souls. But the reliance on a shastra, something written down that he imparts a teaching to, he would not do that. And in fact, if there is any frustration that people have with Sri Aurobindo's integral yoga, it's that we keep looking for a how-to manual, and he hasn't given us that. Yes, because you begin with the inner experience. You begin with the soul stirring you into wakefulness and proceeding from that. It really is from light to greater light. It's not by means of an instruction manual that you're going to bake a cake. This is an internal effort. And you will be led as you grow. As Kabali Shastri once said to N.P. Pundit, as you grow, you will know. So to awaken more than to instruct. And then this natural process in which the emerging soul presses out into the emotional being, lifts the thoughts, gives an energy to the body's life that it lacked before. All of it expressive of the power of the soul awakening to its source. If that light and force awaken within us, as he says, the result is sure. He adds here, in this last sentence of that first paragraph of this section, his whole business is to awaken the divine light and set working the divine force, of which he himself is only a means and an aid. And then he adds, a body or a channel. Because he came to recognize his own physical being was a notice or a point of transmission. The light that was coming into the world was coming in through his body, and the body had its place. You know, it simply is not a matter of the psychological stability of the realization, that you can get the experience and hold it and firm it up, and it becomes a permanent feature of your consciousness, in fact, informs your consciousness. It is also true that the body must be a participant, and that you must, in a sense, become a willing participant throughout the whole of it and be a channel for this force that comes down. Because through you comes flooding into the world higher lights and powers, changing the nature of the mind in humanity. For Sri Aurobindo, it was something that he could see evidenced in his own life, that as this illumination came from above, and he in a sense gave voice to it in the human sphere, so it came to people the minds of others in other parts of the world. He could see his thoughts echoed in other minds. The idea of a single humanity united, well, it's been an idea, but it really grew into the point that it became a part of the watchword of the Republican Party in the United States of America in the 1940s. So not that they adhered to it, not that any political party can, you know, capture and harness that idea, but it does make an appearance more broadly. And the idea that the world is one has become something that the United Nations expresses. Despite its many failures, it has many successes, governing, overseeing human life across and around the globe. Don't give up. A body or a channel. And then the example. Sri Aurobindo was himself austere and impersonal, and yet people could come into his presence and feel an enormous shock of awakening. You may remember that there was a book some decades back by Rhoda Lecoq, who was, let's call her a Jungian, who had just visited Jung in Europe, I think, and came to meet Sri Aurobindo in the last days of his life, and saw Sri Aurobindo on the 24th of November in 1950. And she was waiting in line to see him. And when finally she stepped in front of him, and this is a course summary, she felt that time stopped, that she was standing in front of this Himalayan figure, all composed of light and wisdom. There was no movement in time. There was no tick-tock. And she felt this immense love as well. So light and love were there as a radiant, powerful influence. And then something made her aware that her moment was finished, and she moved, but never lost the power of that impact. Absorbed it, it became part of her being. And she went on to write fine philosophic books and insightful psychological essays. Others had similar experiences when they stood before Sri Aurobindo, or indeed stood before the mother. Let's not leave her out. We're speaking of Sri Aurobindo here because he wrote these words, but she was herself a tremendous influence who could, at the right auspicious moment, Brahma Muhurta, look inside and stir the psychic from its cavernous depths to come forward and emerge, and you find your soul, and then can live in harmony with those whom you mistrusted before. And then a glory of a divine society has the possibility of being seated. But with this example, because he lived it, Sri Aurobindo could fire the imagination in a seeker, stimulate that aspiration that he speaks of here. But note, too, that what was present in the ideal teacher of the integral yoga is a dynamic realization, not simply the static realization that lives behind, but which has force, which will influence life, which will reshape the way that we live, feel, see. Well, as powerful as the example is, influence is more important than example, he says. This is what changes us. We hear what they say, we see what they do, and we can emulate that. But being receptive to the influence when it comes, being able to drink it in, because it is powerful, it is a flow of brilliant power that comes into one to enable you to change. Mother said, we worry about the wastage of physical resources in the ashram, when someone pointed it out to her, she says, but so much more is wasted. All the grace, all the power, all the light that could change your being, I'm constantly showering upon you. But how many people receive it? How many people use it? If we leave it unused, then our opportunity on earth is lost. This last sentence, for the greatest master is much less a teacher than a presence pouring the divine consciousness and its constituting light and power and purity and bliss into all who are receptive around him. He added, it's not in the original essay that appeared in the Arya. This idea, too, of the influence that enters into the disciple is something that is known in the Tantra. In fact, this is what happens in the process that follows upon initiation. The initiation in Tantric life is generally, not always, but generally, established through ritualistic means, and then with the recitation of the mantra, the utilization of the yantra, the teaching is substantially placed into the body of the tantric aspirant. And this is what, over time, is built into the siddha, into the one who becomes free, liberated, empowered, perfected, in a sense, brought to fulfillment. That is all done through the application of the ritual. Now, you can see Sri Aurobindo's is very different. But the tantric will arrive at a point where the teacher, the guru, the master, in conducting these rites, in conducting these rituals, enters into the being of the disciple, goes inside as the representative of the divine, as Shiva, becomes as if he is Shiva himself, and so conducts business, establishes the point of commerce between the human aspirant and the divine reality. So he is that living link. And depending on the goal of the tantric, whether he's aiming strictly at liberation from the world, mumukshu, where he would be, or if as a sadhaka he's aiming at bubukshu, which is the realization of the divine delight in the world and the acquisition of powers which can then transform life personally and societally. That is done through the power of the mantra, most especially. But in either case, a new self is constructed by the teacher, by the guru, directly replacing the old elements. And a new world is built within by the guru. A new cosmology emerges in view to the aspirant. You see the world as displaced in its old form and replaced by a divine world, and that is what you live and move in. The cord that exists in you, stretching from bottom to top, has been replaced by the cord of the teacher, the pasha, of the guru, becomes your own. So you can see that it is very much a science of engineering, which is the tantric scheme. And it leads to fulfillment, it leads to a liberation of energies in nature, a divinization becomes possible. But for Sri Aurobindo, these are inner elements. We'll return to that. For Sri Aurobindo, if the receptivity is there in the seeker, if the thirst for that knowledge, if the thirst for that reality is present, then if the teacher imparts it, the disciple will receive it. It need not rely upon the artifice of a ritual, on the magic of an enactment. It will happen from consciousness into consciousness. Sri Aurobindo is very much like this next sentence. Does not arrogate to himself guruhood in a humanly vain and self-exalting spirit. As we mentioned earlier, he had no real interest in being a guru anyway. The idea that if he has work, then it will be of a kind directed by the divine. Because really, the perfected spirit is not doing anything anymore. So the work does not belong to him. The work belongs to the supreme, to the Jagat Guru, the world teacher. That work is being conducted in all beings. But the liberated soul who lives in that and who may have been given the assignment, at least temporarily, of being a teacher of the integral yoga, will be doing that without any sense of self. Now, contrast that with the business of guruhood today that many have arisen within America and come from India and other places and learned the methodology of marketing and now can get their teachings out, etc. and become fabulously wealthy and give a modicum of light. I can't say that they aren't doing some good, but the power of the realization should be stabilized before there's any effort. There should there even be effort to try to find an audience to which these inner secrets are transmitted. This is for the inner being to discover. We can teach. Who can listen? Sri Aurobindo has this line in Savitri, one among many thousands, never touched, engrossed in the external world's design, is driven by a secret witness light. And this is the rarity. How many become conscious? One among many thousands. This is one of the great lines. He is a man helping his brothers, a child leading children, a light kindling other lights, an awakened soul, awakening souls. At highest, a power or presence of the divine calling to him other powers of the divine. And this section, a light kindling other lights, all the way to the end, Sri Aurobindo wrote when he came back to revise this chapter. It wasn't there in the original, in the Arya. At highest, a power or presence of the divine, calling to him other powers of the divine. Because it isn't sufficient to transform society to have a single lustrous being. We need to shape a group, a village, a township, a city, based upon changed consciousness. There may be light at the center, but that light has to expand. All should become ignited. All should find and experience their soul. At least feel the vibration and be able to distinguish that from the false lures of passions and excitations and all the things that can distract us. We can work together to establish a new society, to transform human life. If the yogic community does not fulfill that, then what branch of human life will? If those who are most conscious cannot live from the center of their souls, then who shall do that? Then he says, in this closing section where he deals with time, if you have all these aids, if you have the inner teaching, and you have the utsaha, the enthusiasm to go for it, and you have the guiding hand of the teacher from inside to direct your path, then you will win. You will succeed. Even a fall, brashta, will be for him only a means of rising, and death a passage towards fulfillment. Yes, Sri Aurobindo accepts the idea of rebirth. But these are all processes of the being. We come, we live, we leave, we assimilate, we return, we have another inning, we assimilate again, and back and forth we go. But there comes a point at which there is not dawn followed by night, dawn followed by night, but a permanent dawn, when there is awakening into the nature of the soul awareness, so that even when you pass away and you come back again and you take up the next aspect of your eonic mission, You will be little beleaguered by darkness. You will wake up quickly to what your goal is, take up the instruments necessary for that task, and be on the march again. Time is the remaining aid. But we see it simply as the tick-tock, as he says, it is really the instrument of the soul, just like karma is psychologically, for the human, an instrument of the soul. And because we receive the lessons that we need, we receive the return from the energy spent in the way that will awaken us. And time tends to combat or to assist, depending on where we are in our personal awakenings. He says it's a field of circumstances, a field of forces meeting, and it measures out the course. So it is not physical time that he speaks of here. It has a psychological dimension. Our effort is personal, and so time, as we experience it, is a resistance if we live in the ignorance. When we wake up out of that, it appears, or begin to wake up, we see it as a condition, as a medium through which we pass. When they become one, it appears, time appears as both a servant and an instrument. And this takes us back to the book The Mother in chapter 5, reflecting the state of the aspirant's inner being and realization. When you're working, you begin with the idea that I will give, but then you become more aware of being an instrument through which this work is done, and then finally you arrive at the state where you realize you're just a child sitting in the lap of the mother, and that is a greater truth than being an instrument, and a greater truth than being the conscious worker struggling to give something to God. So, similar, comparative. The ideal attitude, endless patience. He adds this last phrase, till it reaches the miraculous instantaneous of the supreme divine transformation. An endless patience, as if you had all eternity. Mother said something like this as well in a little note that she gave. But you also see it in chapter 2 of the book The Mother, where Sri Aurobindo is writing about the nature of personal effort. You can go back and see that. I know we've just read it, so I won't rehearse it. So all these four aids are externalities in common yogic practice. But for Sri Aurobindo, they are inner. The teaching is the teaching of the Veda, not necessarily written down, not the Shastra recorded on manuscripts, but the teaching that we find within and above. We awaken to our soul and we rise into the transcendent, and that is what guides and teaches. That is where the light comes from. The true effort that we deliver ourselves into the progressive power of yoga is an energy born from a ready soul. That is where that enthusiasm comes from. Again, enthusiasm is from the Greek word that means God-inspired zeal, and the God is within. The God within you, at the core of your being, is the same as that above. And it stimulates you, and that is where your enthusiasm comes from. And the teacher is again the inner teacher, not the one who sits before you, because even that person who sits before you is a spokesperson, a channel for that being. That being speaks into your heart, into your mind, massages into your body the greater truth. And time is simply the inner context, the field and circumstances. You see, he doesn't relate it to how we typically describe time. Time, kala in Sanskrit, is a much more subtle reality than that which Einstein had to deal with in the construction of his physics. So, this is the first chapter of the Yoga of Divine Works. Much more to do. Let's look at Savitri. This is a section in Book 11, the Book of Everlasting Day. The Soul's Choice and the Supreme Consummation. Yet shall there glow on mind like a horned moon, the Spirit's crescent splendor in pale skies, and light man's life upon his Godward road. But more there is concealed in God's beyond that shall one day reveal its hidden face. Now mind is all, and its uncertain ray. Mind is the leader of the body and life. Mind, the thought-driven chariot of the soul, carrying the luminous wanderer in the night to vistas of a far, uncertain dawn, to the end of the spirit's fathomless desire, to its dream of absolute truth and utter bliss. There are greater destinies mind cannot surmise. Fixed on the summit of the evolving path, the traveler now treads in the ignorance, unaware of his next step, not knowing his goal. Mind is not all his tireless climb can reach. There is a fire on the apex of the worlds. There is a house of the eternal's light. There is an infinite truth, an absolute power. The spirit's mightiness shall cast off its mask. Its greatness shall be felt shaping the world's course. It shall be seen in its own veilless beams, a star rising from the inconscient's night, a sun climbing to supernature's peak. Abandoning the dubious middle way, a few shall glimpse the miraculous origin, and some shall feel in you the secret force, and they shall turn to meet a nameless trend, adventurers into a mightier day. Ascending out of the limiting breadths of mind, they shall discover the world's huge design and step into the truth, the right, the vast. You shall reveal to them the hidden eternities, the breath of infinitudes not yet revealed, some rapture of the bliss that made the world, some rush of the force of God's omnipotence, some beam of the omniscient mystery. But when the hour of the divine draws near, the mighty mother shall take birth in time, and God be born into the human clay in forms made ready by your human lives. Then shall the truth supreme be given to men. There is a being beyond the being of mind, an immeasurable cast into many forms, a miracle of the multitudinous one. There is a consciousness mind cannot touch. its speech cannot utter, nor its thought reveal. It has no home on earth, no center in man, yet is the source of all things thought and done, the fount of the creation and its works. It is the origin of all truth here, the sun orb of mind's fragmentary rays, infinity's heaven that spills the rain of God, the immense that calls to man to expand the spirit, the wide aim that justifies his narrow attempts, a channel for the little he tastes of bliss. Some shall be made the glory's receptacles and vehicles of the eternal's luminous power. These are the high forerunners, the heads of time, the great deliverers of earthbound mind, the high transfigurers of human clay, the firstborn of a new supernal race. The incarnate dual power shall open God's door. Eternal supermind, touch earthly time. The superman shall wake in mortal man and manifest the hidden demigod, or grow into the godlight and god force, revealing the secret deity in the cave. Then shall the earth be touched by the Supreme. His bright unveiled transcendence shall illumine the mind and heart and force the life and act to interpret his inexpressible mystery in a heavenly alphabet of divinity's signs. Namaste, Jai Ma.